This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
We are talking with Lewis Goodman. Lewis is a former deputy district attorney and experienced Alameda County criminal defense lawyer. We're talking about Brian Walsh, an individual that we haven't heard much from in quite some time, but will likely in the not too distant future. You may remember Brian Walsh and his wife, who is still missing, Anna Walsh, at least her body is missing. He's been charged with her murder. And Brian's less than questionable, less than not questionable, internet searches, I guess you could say. He's the one who did the hundreds of searches on basically how to hide a body, how to dissolve a body, how to get an inheritance. It was pretty questionable.
I think the lesson in the whole Walsh case is that evidence these days is very different than it was 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. And privacy is very different than it was 25 years ago. Essentially, if you are on a cell phone, your movement is easily tracked. And that's, you know, has to do in this case, let's just start with the notion of where he was and where he was not. And of course, he told the investigators that he was at certain locations. And then it turns out he wasn't at those locations, but he was at a Home Depot buying a lot of cleaning supplies, which is interesting. And of course, the reason that the investigators were able to determine that was because of his own cell phone. Also, a great deal of the movement on behalf of Anna Walsh was able to be determined because of her cell phone movement. Mm-hmm. So you get to that, you know, aspect of the privacy thing. And then I think, I don't know whether I should say most of us, but I think many of us think that somehow or other, if we are in the privacy of our own home or our own car or our own office, or for that matter, sitting on a park bench with our own cell phone and doing internet searches, that somehow or other that information is private. And that is very much not private. And in this case, where Brian Walsh did these searches on his phone for things that are really, really sort of frightening, you know, where he says how long before a body begins to give off an odor and what does formaldehyde do? How to clean blood from a wooden floor. I mean, these are the kinds of searches where, sure, maybe you're writing a research paper about it, or if you or I were to sit there and, decide to punch into our computer, is it better to put crime scene clothes away or wash them? Sure, you can look that up. No one's preventing you from doing it. But when you put all of these searches together, along with a wife who there's been some issues with, who is now missing and has been missing for several days, and where your own statements say that you were someplace that you were not, and your cell phone says that you were someplace where you said you were not, that all of a sudden becomes really powerful evidence if presented to a jury on the issue of guilt and innocence.
How does one even defend themselves against things like this? I mean, in the past, you could, before we had such digital evidence and such, there was, I think, more room in people's minds for error of, well, I think this was the guy I saw over here at the Home Depot, or it was more relying on eyewitness testimony, or, you know, just humans. And humans can be flawed when it comes to digital footprints and things like that. There's no way that a cell phone or an internet search, you know, magically happened without someone making that search take place. It's just not a refutable thing. One I could see arguing maybe another person did it or this or that, but obviously we can track that down as well. How does one defend against things like this?
I'm not sure you can.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the kind of thing where you could say, well, this is just sort of circumstantial evidence. I was looking it up because I was worried that something had happened to my wife, and I was, you know, concerned about it. I'm still concerned about it. You know, she hasn't been found, and I'm very concerned about what somebody may have done to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been concerned from the beginning.
Have you seen any cases where someone does try to defend themselves against things like this, against internet searches, against cell phone triangulation data that puts someone at the scene of a crime, and be successful or not successful? I'm just curious as to what you've seen people try to defend themselves against where the evidence is so, you know, it's there and just factual and damning.
It's been done. I think that just even in the last few years, you know, 5 years, the cell phone triangulation evidence has gotten a lot better. And I think that the government and police investigators have become a lot more careful about how they use pings off of cell phone towers. And are much more careful about the way those pings are used and analyzed. There's this case that's been in the news for some time, the Serial podcast case of Saeed Anand, where there was cell phone evidence used against him that then turned out to not be very good cell phone evidence. And I think that we've come a long way since then.
Are you surprised how people, specifically jurors, interpret this information, interpret cell phone information or internet searches? Do they fully grasp just how factual and accurate that information is, or does this still need to be really spelled out for them? Do jurors still look at some of these things as somewhat objectionable or possibly flawed?
I think they may look at it in terms of objectionable, in terms of kind of an invasion of privacy. But I think that I wouldn't even say sophisticated. I would just say any person who's walking around these days who regularly uses a cell phone and a computer, which is like most of us, has to understand that we've all given up an enormous amount of privacy in order to use those tools. And what struck me about the Brian Walsh case was just how that lack of privacy really can work against a criminal defendant.
It's amazing to me that anyone these days would think that after committing a crime like this, that they wouldn't be found or looked up or investigated on their internet searches. I mean, to so blatantly conduct what Brian Walsh conducted in terms of searches is baffling to me, unless he intended to be caught. It just seems, it's almost like putting a gun to your head, pulling the trigger if the gun's loaded and expecting not to be shot in terms of doing something like this. Do you think Brian was really that oblivious as to what could be found on him? Or was this almost intentional in some way, shape, or form?
I don't know if it was intentional, but I think that someone who would just do what he does or what he did, and I mean, it's pretty clear to me that he killed his wife, is not really thinking all that clearly to begin with. Because I think that if someone is having marital difficulties, and, you know, probably if you're married, you have some level of marital difficulty. There are so many ways to resolve those issues. Mm-hmm. And murder is just not one of them. And whatever money might be available, you know, I mean, these are people who have some money. And I think that's one of the things that makes the case interesting.
Yeah.
But the, you know, the fact that there's money involved, that there's real estate involved, that there's, I think that level of greed, whether it's on a financial, emotional, psychological level, I think that level of greed sometimes blinds people to what they're actually doing.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Lewis Goodman, former deputy district attorney and experienced Alameda County criminal defense lawyer. Thank you so much for your insight, Lewis. Always a pleasure to have you on the program. If you like the show, press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any breaking updates or discussions on the cases that we're following for you right here. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.